Hello and welcome to the TAA teleconference, Scholarly Writing, Strengthening Your Literature Review, presented by Sonia Foss and William Waters. Sonia Foss is a professor in the Department of Communication at the University of Colorado, Denver. Her research and teaching interests are in contemporary rhetorical theory and criticism, feminist perspectives on communication, the incorporation of marginalized voices into rhetorical theory and practice, and visual rhetoric. She is the author or co-author of the books Destination Dissertation, A Traveler's Guide to a Done Dissertation, Rhetorical Criticism, Contemporary Perspectives on Rhetoric, Inviting Transformation, Feminist Rhetorical Theories, and Women Speak. Her essays in communication journals have dealt with topics such as invitational rhetoric, agency in the film Run, Lola, Run, feminine spectatorship in Garrison Keillor's monologues, visual argumentation, and body art. William Waters is an assistant professor of English at the University of Houston downtown. His research and teaching interests are in writing theory and practice, the history of English language, linguistics, and modern grammar. He is the co-author of Destination Dissertation, A Traveler's Guide to a Done Dissertation, and was the managing editor of La Puerta, A Doorway into the Academy. He also has published several poems in national journals. Sonia and William present the TAA-sponsored workshop Destination Dissertation, Practical Strategies for Writing the Thesis or Dissertation, and Sharing Results, Crafting an Article. They also offer individual coaching. I will email all participants Sonia and William's email addresses following the teleconference if you have any individual questions for them. I now turn the teleconference over to Sonia and William.
Thank you. Hello, everyone. This is Sonia. And we're delighted to be doing one of TAA's teleconferences, and thank you to TAA and to Kim for hosting this today. Unfortunately, we don't have time for all of you to introduce yourselves. That just takes up too much time with 19 people. We're going to assume that you're interesting people who are either graduate students or professors who are interested in strengthening your literature reviews. And by that, we mean making them more sophisticated and more efficient. And let me just say at the beginning that we're going to be going through this process of doing a literature review relatively quickly. There are a lot more details and examples in our book, Destination Dissertation. And by the way, we think this book is relevant for anyone doing research, so not just people working on a thesis or a dissertation. So don't think that there's nothing for you in the book if you've already completed your dissertation. Okay, so here's how we're going to proceed today. William and I are going to take turns explaining the process that we've come up with for doing a lit review. Hopefully our switching back and forth won't be too confusing or annoying for you, and we're going to hope that we can keep coordinated between the two of us. We are going to stop at a few places during our explanation to let you ask questions, so if you would please hold your questions until we get to those spots and call for questions, and there will also be time for questions at the end of the session. Okay, so let's get started. We like to conceptualize the process of doing research like taking a trip. You go off someplace new, you learn new things, it's exciting and stimulating, you encounter some things you didn't expect and you deal with them, and you return home after a fixed amount of time. So in that context, we see the literature review as your opportunity to learn what previous travelers had said about the sites of your topic. Others have gone before you, and they're very eager to share their discoveries with you. And so the literature is your opportunity to hear the tales and the advice of these previous travelers. In less metaphorical terms, your study is going to be contributing to some kind of theoretical debate in your field. And that debate or that conversation is taking place through the literature, so you want to know what other people are saying in that debate. By the way, we chose to focus on the process of doing a literature review in this teleconference because we think it's a place where many scholars get hung up in their research journeys. And so what we're going to do is to share with you some ideas that we hope will ensure that getting stuck on the lit review doesn't happen to you. We want to start by clarifying the purpose of the literature review. The purpose is not to show everything you know about a topic. It's not a place to show that you've uncovered every single book and article ever published in an area. and it's not the place to summarize everything you read that led you to your research topic. Instead, here's the way we like to think about the Lit Review. It's a convention for familiarizing your readers with critical terms and findings that contextualize your research question. So it's designed to provide contextual knowledge that the reader is going to need to know to fully understand the significance of your study. So it provides readers with what they need to know for your study to make sense. So what goes into a literature review then, if that's the purpose? Well, it's very easy to work out the categories of your literature review because the categories of your lit review come directly from the key terms of your research question. So the categories of your lit review come from the key terms of your research question. So those key terms become the major areas of your literature review. So let me give you an example. Let's say that your research question is this. What factors characterize successful mentoring relationships for minority students at the graduate level? So what factors characterize successful mentoring relationships for minority students at the graduate level? All right, so now you can use those key terms in that question to come up with what should be categories in your literature review. So they probably would be things like characteristics of successful mentoring, because you've got successful mentoring in there, characteristics of successful mentoring of minority students. You're particularly interested in what works for minority students, and minority students is in your question. A third category of your lit review might be characteristics of successful mentoring of graduate students, because you've got the graduate level in there. And then the fourth one might be factors that affect the completion of graduate degrees, and you would include this body of literature because you are defining successful in your question as the completion of the graduate degree. So I know that's fast, and again, there are more examples, and that explanation is also given in the chapter on lit reviews in the book. But the thing we want you to get from this is that you come up with the categories of your lit review from the key terms of your research question. Now, depending on the kind of data that you are using, you also might want to include in your lit review studies that have been done of your data that might inform your own analysis of those data. So let's say, for example, that you are going to use as data in your project works of art by the feminist artist Judy Chicago. So then you would also want to see if studies have been done on her works of art in the past, and you would include that in your lit review. Or let's say your data are Walt Disney cartoons. So you'd want to see, well, what studies have been done of those data, what kinds of findings about, and what kinds of questions have those studies produced. Now, there's one mistake that scholars sometimes make about lit reviews, and we just want to caution you about that. Some people include in the literature review literature about their method. So either the method they're using to collect the data or the method they're using to analyze the data. Any literature that you think you need to cover related to the method belongs in the discussion of your method. So they'll go either in your section of your article on your research design or the chapter in your dissertation on a method. And you can remember not to put literature about method into your lit review because a method is not going to be one of the key terms of your research question. And so the key terms of the research question are leading to the categories of the lit review. Your method isn't mentioned in your research question, so thus it doesn't become a category of your lit review. Save it for when you're talking about your method. So, let's assume now that you've figured out the major categories of your literature review from the key terms of your research question. You've gone to the library and the internet, and you've collected all your sources of information relevant to those categories. Now, you're going to be discovering all sorts of interesting books and articles out there, but resist the temptation to be terrorized by the literature. Don't check those books out from the library. Don't download them from the internet if they don't clearly pertain to the categories that you identified for your lit review from those key terms of your research question. So this means You can skip huge bodies of literature because they aren't relevant to your study.
Great. This is William. And again, thank you for inviting us. We're going to assume that you've gathered this literature and that you have a large stack of books and articles sitting around and you want to know what to do with them. In particular, the real heart of the literature review process that we use gives you a way to order those books, to take on the relevant information, to be able to order it and put it together in a really interesting and unique way. So you've got this huge stack of books, huge stack of articles. What are you going to do with it? First thing you want to do is, you want to take our method, right, and you want to follow it through so that you can figure out how to identify the key parts in each of those books, how you'll synthesize them, and put them together. The added bonus of this method is that when you've collected these parts, you'll see that the literature review almost writes itself.
Okay, so here's what we encourage you to do. Okay, take one book from the top of that big stack of books that you've got in front of you. Open it to the table of contents. And what you want to do is to look through that table of contents to see what chapters appear to be relevant to the categories that you've identified for your lit review. When you see a chapter that you think, well, this might relate, turn to that chapter and look at the section headings of that chapter. And if you find a section that seems like it's relevant to your study, skim it. And you're looking for certain things as you skim. You're looking for claims, conclusions, findings about the constructs that you are investigating. Claims, conclusions, findings. You're looking for definitions of your terms. You're looking for follow-up studies relevant to your project. You're looking for any gaps that you notice in the literature. And you're looking for disagreements about the constructs that you're investigating.
If you look at the first handout that we gave you, the handout is number one, sample literature, sample lit review page. This will be pertinent to this point. What you've done is you've looked for the things that Sonia has mentioned. You're reading through very quickly. You're not reading the same way that you would read for a comprehensive exam or to learn new material. You're looking for only the key passages that have to do with identifying the literature. As you find those passages, you'll notice on the handout that the handout that you have is a page from Rhetorical Criticism, and it's on Michel Foucault. You'll notice on the left-hand side, you see where it says CPR 349, CPR 349, and there's a bracket around the first, the second paragraph that's got down a second category of rules concerns, and then there's another bracket around another condition. When you find relevant passages, you're going to mark where they begin, where they end, that's the bracket, and then you're going to put a key, can be just the titles of the book and the page number that it shows up on. See, the 349 from the top is over on the bottom. You're going to see why that's important in a few minutes, but you mark every single passage. You start with the first book, you move through the first book, go to the second book, go to the first article, second article, and you keep going until all the passages are marked.
Okay, so you want to keep reading. Let's say you see another idea in that book that's useful for your thinking about your project. Keep marking those passages. And you just are reading very quickly through your books, looking for headings and sections that are relevant for you. You're skipping those that aren't. And you can read very quickly because you know what you're looking for. When you're done reading and coding the relevant sections of a chapter, go back to the table of contents, see if there are other chapters that might be relevant to your literature review. If so, go to them. Again, skim through the sections, the section headings first. The relevant sections you'll skim through, and you'll mark the passages that are relevant to your literature review. When you've coded all of the chapters that seem relevant, then go to the index of the book. Look up the key terms that are relevant to your project and go to the pages to which those terms direct you. And you might find some ideas that you didn't pick up in your earlier coding of the chapters. And again, if you find relevant ideas, mark them in that same way. Just put a line in the margin by the passage that is relevant. Now you're going to want to use the same process to code your articles that you are using to code your books. So look through the article to see which sections seem relevant to the categories of your lit review. When you see a section that might be useful, skim it, seeing if there are any excerpts that you want to pick up.
There are two major contributions to the method that we're talking about. One major contribution is that it's going to give you a more sophisticated literature review. The second major contribution is it's really going to make you move efficiently in terms of time. It's going to keep you moving quickly. So the key here is not to get lost in the details of a study, not to fall into a kind of reading that you're used to doing when just reading a book. You know what you're looking for because of the key terms of the research question, and Sonia has mentioned, right, the types of things that you're looking for, claims and conclusions. So you're really looking for declarative sentences and not so much the supporting examples of those declarative sentences. So go through looking only for the claims and the conclusions that are relevant to your research question so that you can mark those and put those together to use in producing your literature review. What this means is that you can review most journals and articles very, very quickly.
Yes, so it might take you 45 minutes to read and code a book. It might take you 10 or 15 minutes to go through an article. Especially with the article, you're not paying any attention to the method. You don't care how they generated the knowledge. You want to care what that knowledge is. Now you might think, well, how can I possibly get through a book or an article that fast? And again, it's because you're reading with a very clear focus. You're not reading every word. You are constantly asking, is this chapter relevant for my study? Is this section relevant for my study? Is this paragraph relevant for my study? And if it's not, you skip it. So as William mentioned, this is a very different kind of reading from the reading you did, for example, for your comprehensive exams. Those require that you have a very deep understanding of the books and articles you read. But in contrast, when you're coding literature for your lit review, you are getting a snapshot view of the literature that's directly relevant to the project that you've conceptualized. And by the way, we also want to be very clear that coding the literature, we call this process coding the literature, it happens at the very beginning of the reading process. You are doing the coding of the literature and marking the excerpts the very first time you read a book or an article in your stack. So you don't read your books and articles first and then go back through them to code them. So reading and coding are all the same process in this method. So we're going to pause here for a minute and see if there are any questions about the process so far.
And just to remind you, if there are questions, you'll need to do the 4-star to unmute yourself.
So does, in the handout, does the CPR, is that some kind of other notation that's being used to tell you what type of information you've got there?
No, that's just an abbreviation for the title of the book. The title of the book is Contemporary Perspectives on Rhetoric. So just give yourself some kind of code so you'll know how to get back to that book or that article. It could be the author's last name.
Thanks.
One of the keys here that's making this efficient and quick is that you haven't yet decided what these passages mean. You've only identified them. You've only found passages that are relevant to producing the lit review. So the code is, at this point, is just the title of the book.
And I won't say that.
Okay. Shall we move on?
I think so. I don't see any other questions. So.
Okay, great. If there's no other questions, we'll move on. So you've collected, essentially, you've gone through all of your materials, all of the books and all the articles, and that you've looked for these key concepts. You've marked a bracket around them and put a citation so that you can find where they are later. What do you do next? You go to a copy machine. You take all of your articles and all of your books to a copy machine. Even if the article is already a copy, you want to make sure that you make a duplicate copy of them, because what you're going to do is cut them up. So you take the first book, go through, find any page that you have a mark on, and make a copy of that page. If you have articles, do the same thing so that you have a duplicate copy of all of your work. As soon as you have a duplicate copy of all your work, you get out your pair of scissors, and you are actually going to physically cut out each of those places that we've put a bracket around. You actually physically cut out those excerpts so that you end up with an entire pile of slips of paper in front of you. Each slip of paper will have the excerpt, will have the citation that tells you the title of the book, and the page number. The good news is that you've taken a large stack of books, a huge amount of material, and you've reduced them at this point to still a very large pile of slips, but you now have a closed set of material that you'll use to produce your literature review.
And by the way, I just want to clarify one thing. Especially if the book isn't yours and you're going to return it to the library, you probably want to use pencil instead of pen to make your marks. You also can wait to write the page number and a citation to the source until after you've copied them. So if it's not your book, it might be easier after you've copied each page that's got one of those marks by it. After you've got that copy, then you can write the page number and a citation to the book on that copy instead of actually in the book. So that's just a slight alternative that you can do, especially if the book isn't.
Hello.
Okay, so now, as William said, you have this big mound.
Are you just eating your lunch yet? I'm sorry. Is this for the young dining? Yeah.
Okay, so now you've got this big mound of these excerpts, and each excerpt has a page number and some kind of reference to the source. So now what you want to do is to sort those pieces of paper according to like topic. So put everything that's about the same thing in the same pile. So let's say, for example, that you've got a research project and a lit review having something to do with agency. Well, you might discover that a lot of your excerpts have to do with the origins or the sources of agency. So you make a pile out of the slips that all deal with sources or origins. And then if you come across slips that have to do with that same topic, you put them in that same pile. Maybe you've got another pile that has excerpts that have to do with definitions of agency. So you'll put all the slips of paper that have to do with definitions of agency in one pile. Maybe you've got another pile that has mechanisms for enacting agency. So everything that you've got on that topic goes in that pile. And what you want to do is to just label your piles as you're sorting with, we use post-it notes, just put some kind of indicator on each pile. What's the topic here? So it will make it easy to sort. And after you are, and you can see on handout number 2, you can see this sorting process. So here we've got different piles of excerpts, and you've got little post-it notes that are labeling for you. What am I seeing in that pile? So that everything about that topic goes in that pile. And when you're all done sorting your piles, then you want to go back through them to be sure that everything in one pile is about that one topic. If you've got a huge pile, you might need to sort it into smaller piles. But when you get all done and you're happy with the piles you have, the size of the piles, you are sure that everything in each pile pertains to that topic, then what you want to do is to put your piles of excerpts into envelopes and label your envelopes, and this is so that your piles can't get messed up by human or animal companions who might come into your workspace. So we're going to pause again right here to see if there are any questions so far. I guess not. So,
okay.
William, you want to keep going?
Great. Yes. I just want to, two things. This is the first time we've done a teleconference, so it's a very interesting experience for Sonia and I. But I want to just pick up and make sure that that we stress two things, that we're going relatively quickly through these ideas and that they're explained in much more detail in the book that that Kim mentioned at the beginning of the teleconference. Also, that the piles that Sonia's talking about and that the handout point to, the labels underneath the piles, they come from, when you put the pieces together, they've come from the category, they've come from the information that's in that pile, the pile itself, names itself. Okay, well, once you've got those piles, as Sonia's mentioned, and put them into envelopes, the key here is that you want to create something we call a conceptual schema. And this is really the heart of making a literature review much more robust and much more interesting than typical literature reviews. You might have read a lot of literature reviews that simply treat studies one by one or articles or findings one by one in a chronological or a topical way. These literature reviews tend to be very tedious and boring, and usually if you're reading, you'll skip over these sections thinking, well, all right, it's not really doing very much for me. So we want to create, or we have created, a method that's going to help you turn your literature review into an argument that supports your work as well. The key and the heart of that is the conceptual schema. The conceptual schema is a way of organizing your literature review to connect all of those piles that you just made. Essentially what it is, it's going to be the explanation of what you see holds those piles together. And you're going to find it by manipulating those labels around. By doing this, you'll be able to engage your literature. You'll be able to organize all the major topics of your literature and engage it to produce a literature review that's much more coherent and sophisticated than the typical literature reviews that you've read before.
So you have the means for creating a conceptual schema for your lit review right in front of you. So what you want to do now is to go to your computer and just type up a list of the labels that are on your envelopes or your piles. So each of those piles, which are now in envelopes, you have a label for it. Just type all of those labels into a list in your computer. We use a big font size for this. Print them out and get your scissors out again, and you're going to cut those labels apart. So if you look at handout number 3 on the left side, you will see an example of this. So what you see are the labels for the piles just typed up and cut apart. Okay, so you've got all of those in front of you now. Take those labels to your desk or a table or the bed or the floor. Lay them out in any order and begin to play around with the relationships that you see among the topics that are represented in the labels. So what you're doing is just playing around with those labels to see what's the best way for me to organize these to tell the story about the literature. So do you have some topics that disagree with a position, some that agree, or maybe group those together? Do you have some topics that are subsets of another topic? We'll put those under that label. Maybe you've got 3 different topics that are major variables that have been studied in the literature. We'll put those 3 together. Are there some things that belong under those categories? Lay them under there. Maybe you've got some topics that are more important and some less important. Physically lay them out in that order. Maybe you discover that your literature could be organized by different influences on what you are studying, or different components of a phenomenon. Or maybe you see that what you've got is something organized by the functions of something, or the outcomes of something. Or maybe you've got different models for something, or different ways of doing something. Maybe you've got in your subcategories or your labels different perspectives on something. Or maybe you've got a comparison and a contrast going among different perspectives. And again, you just want to keep playing around with what are some different ways that I can organize this literature. And it's easy to do because you're simply moving around the labels that represent your piles. And, of course, those piles represent the sub-areas of relevant literature. So you'll see a sample conceptual schema for organizing literature on the right-hand side of handout number 3. So those labels that were just laid out in front of you originally on the left-hand side have now been organized. And so now you see that this person is conceptualizing the literature as having 4 major components: definition of agency, perspectives on origin of agency, mechanisms for agency, and outcomes for agency. And then under each of those 4 major topics, they have figured out, well, I've got some areas of literature under each of those, sub-areas of those, things I want to discuss that the literature talks about under each of those 4 main categories, and now they're just laid out under those.
The key here is that there's really no right or wrong way to make a conceptual schema, and that's really important to stress. Someone else could come and look at these same labels that you have on the left-hand side of handout number 3, and they could put them into a different order. The fact that they put it into a different order is not a problem. What's really key here is that the order that you find for these labels makes sense for you. When it makes sense for you, it does 2 things. The first is it gives an organizing principle to the literature that you can explain. The second thing that's way more important is when you see, when you discover a connection between these different labels, this is what's going to make it so that you can tell a story in your writing and that you can make an explanation of how those pieces fit together. So it's there's no problem if someone sees a different organizing principle, but it's very, very important that you see an organizing principle that makes sense to you. This helps you develop your schema so that you're able to accomplish all the objectives of a strong literature review.
We're going to pause here again.
Stop for a moment.
Questions?
Yeah, okay.
Sorry, William.
That's okay.
We have nonverbal cues here.
Yes.
So any questions about the process so far?
It sounds like we're good to go.
Okay. All right, so now you've figured out your conceptual schema, which means you have physically laid out the labels that represent your envelopes, that represent your piles, in front of you. So now you want to choose a section of the literature review that you want to write. And you can begin with any section, anything that strikes you as this is the one I want to write right now. Because you know exactly what all your sections are, you know how they relate to each other, you know the order in which you want to discuss them, so you can start anywhere. So let's say you've decided to start with this one particular category. Find the envelope with the excerpts related to that label, bring it over to your desk, take all of those excerpts related to that topic out of your envelope, and lay them out in front of you. And now what you're going to do is the same thing you just did, but in a smaller category. So what you want to do is to come up with a mini conceptual schema that presents the literature about this one sub-area, and you can do that by playing around with how do I want to organize all of the excerpts relevant to this one subject in front of me. And so what you are doing is seeing, well, what's the best way to tell the story about this sub-area of the literature. And as you're playing around with different ways to organize those excerpts that you have about that one topic, you'll discover that some of them say the same thing. We'll take out the ones that aren't as eloquent. Some of them you'll say, I thought this was relevant, but it really isn't. Take them out. Maybe you've got way too many studies to talk about one thing. Decide which ones are the best or the primary ones. So you'll be taking some things out. You'll be organizing. You'll be figuring out, okay, exactly what is it I want to say and what's the best way to organize it in terms of this one small piece of my literature.
Now, what you have left in front of you when you sit down and look at that, you've made a mini conceptual schema of these excerpts from the envelopes in front of you, and they're in an order. What you've done is you've created an organic outline. And you've already seen, by creating a conceptual schema that we talked about on handout number 3, you've already seen a connection between these pieces, so you know the story that you want to tell. So once you've decided on the number and order of the excerpts that you're going to use, go ahead and type them into the computer in the order that you're going to use them. And all you're going to do, this is the magical part, this is the really exciting part where the literature review starts to write itself. All you need to do is explain the connection that you saw in the conceptual schema around these excerpts that you're typing into the computer. So you might start out by writing a short introduction of what, for example, definitions of agency. If you have two different definitions of agency, your short introduction might say, well, there are basically two definitions of agency in the literature. The first is, and then you would have the excerpts from the envelopes. And you would have transitions, the second is, and you would name it and have excerpts from the envelopes as well. You're going to take whatever excerpts you've identified, type them into your computer, and that will tell you how long your literature review is going to be. You don't have to guess whether you're done or not done. As soon as you've added all of the excerpts from your envelopes, you're done with your literature review. So one of the ways that we recommend to keep you moving is to simply type in all of those excerpts from the beginning to end, and then write the argument around them.
So it's what we really like about the process is you are literally writing your way through the pile as you type the first excerpt, the second excerpt, the third excerpt, the fourth, and all the way down to the end of that envelope of excerpts, and you know exactly when you're done because you've gone through all of the excerpts that you wanted to keep related to that topic. So because you're using the ideas of others, the substance of the lit review is not yours, of course, but how you present that literature review and the connections you make among the pieces of the literature are your own unique inventions. So by coding your literature to create an innovative conceptual schema, you are doing a form of original scholarship, and this allows you to situate your study in a larger debate or conversation in your field and to do it in a very efficient way. So that's a very quick overview of our process for doing a lit review that is sophisticated and efficient. And so now we'll see if there are any questions about the whole process. Maybe everybody muted themselves too much.
Okay, well, if there's no questions, I will just add a few points that that we talked about in other places, but we haven't been able to hit here. The fact that you've got all the excerpts in an envelope means that a lot of times when we talk to writers, one of the biggest complaints is that they don't have enough time to write. They need, they think they need 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. Because you have these envelopes and because you know the relation of the envelope to all the other envelopes, you can actually carry an envelope with you, and if you have 15 or 20 minutes of time, you can write one section of the literature review, know that it's going to fit into all the other sections because you know the argument it's making. And this is a way of capturing 15 and 20 minutes to use every day.
If you want to ask a question, you just press 4-star again to unmute yourself.
Yeah, I have a basic question. Do you have a rough ballpark? You gave us a ballpark time figure for how quickly we could go through some of the articles and books at the very beginning with the coding process. Do you have a rough frame of, how many excerpts equals how many pages of text, for example?
I'm sorry, I didn't quite hear the question. Are you asking how many sources to use, or are you asking how quickly to go through?
Yeah, I'm wondering if you have a ballpark of, so you have, 50 excerpts in an envelope, how many pages of text that ends up being based on the process you've described?
Actually, that's a great question. And there's a number of ways to answer it. The first thing that we would do is we would look at where is the literature review going. So for example, if you're writing a book, we would look at models of the book, other models of the book from the same publisher or in the same discipline. If you're writing an article, we would look at models of articles from those publications. We would measure what percentage of the literature review was to the whole. So let's just for a conversation say that the article is 10,000 words and that the literature review takes up 3,000 of those words. If you have 10 envelopes, if you have 10 envelopes and it's going to be 3,000 words, each envelope is going to be about 300 words. So you use that pattern to select how many of those excerpts to use. Does that make sense?
It does. Thank you.
Yes. To follow up on that question, one of the things that happens this way is that you can take a very large number of experts, and if you're writing both a book and an article, you can use the same body of literature, but you can tailor it so it's much larger or much smaller and still have the same depth of coverage, the same range of coverage in both cases.
And for students who are writing dissertations, you may not have models as accessible for how long a lit review should be. Then just talk to your advisor and say, how long are you expecting this whole literature review to be? And then you know how many pages you can devote to each of the envelopes that you've constructed.
The fact that the envelopes are closed is one of the things that makes us very efficient. A lot of people will sort of start with one book, they'll start writing, then they'll move to another book, and they really don't know how big is the literature review going to be or not be. And they never know when they're done. They never know, did I cover enough books? Here you've gone and you've made coverage of the whole field first. From there, you're selecting. So you're always selecting down, making a bigger amount of information into a smaller amount.
I'll bring up another issue that some people sometimes talk about in response to this method. And they often say, well, if I'm reading so quickly and skimming, isn't it likely that I'm going to miss some big ideas? And we say no. And the reason we say no is because if you have done a pretty good job of compiling the sources relevant to your categories of your lit review, and there's a major idea out there, it's going to be talked about probably in more than one of your sources. And so you're going to pick it up just by doing this process through all of the things you've got. If you're a student working on your dissertation, if you miss a major idea, your advisor or your committee members are likely to tell you, you know, there's one thing out there that you haven't picked up, and then you can go pick it up. But it will show up, and you really don't need to worry about that you've missed something major. Well, either we were very clear or we were very uninteresting. I don't know which.
Well, and we have several people still on the line, so they were interested in, have remained interested in the discussion. Perhaps people just don't have any questions, and that is fine. We can wrap the teleconference up. Unless anyone has any other questions, and you can press 4-star again to unmute yourself to ask a question.
I do have a question. How do you feel about the inclusion of things that your readers might expect you to include, though you may not be using that source?
Yes. Sometimes there will be, like, this happens in a couple of instances. Sometimes there will be a whole body of literature that's vaguely relevant to your topic, but it's often maybe too abstract, or you really don't need to know that. But people might expect that you signal that you know that. Then what we recommend that you do is you just put a couple of paragraphs where you acknowledge that body of literature, you give a couple of samples of the kinds of people doing the work in that area, the findings they're coming up with, and then go on. So yes, you can signal that you know it's out there, you know it's got a little bit of relevance, but it's not really what you need to know to understand your study. So just devote a couple of paragraphs where you give some samples of the literature. And sometimes, for example, if you're a student working on a dissertation, an advisor might say you've got to cover this body of literature. And so then, yeah, you have to put it in the best way you can. But again, see if you can do it in a way that doesn't allow it to take over the rest of the literature review that is more coherent.
Also, sometimes the literature that you're talking about may actually show up in the discussion area or in your conclusion area to acknowledge that you recognize that there's literature there. As a general rule, we say that the purpose of the literature review is to be able to tell the reader that the answer to your research question is meaningful and relevant, and you shouldn't have any more literature than you need in order to do that job.
Did that answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, great.
Okay, well, any other questions?
You gave us a list at the beginning of what we should be skimming for, and you said claims and conclusions, declarative sentences. What else was on that list?
Definitions of terms, calls for follow-up studies that are relevant to your project. If someone is saying we ought to study this some more, gaps that you notice in the literature, disagreements around the constructs that you're investigating. So claims, conclusions, findings, definitions of terms, calls for follow-up studies, gaps that you notice in the literature, disagreements about the constructs you're investigating.
Thank you.
And as a general rule, you want to avoid where someone walks into giving a specific example of something. They'll make a claim, and then they'll give an example of the claim. You can skip the example. For people who are still here, just as a general rule, when you see professional authors putting out a large number of books relatively quickly, this is the method that we're talking about. If they don't use it exactly this way, this is the heart of what they're doing to get to digest a lot of knowledge in a lot of books very, very quickly, is that they're not actually reading those books. They're going through and taking out the major claims.
This has been an educational presentation brought to you by the Text and Academic Authors Association.